Okay, well, welcome back, everyone. I hope you had a good lunch and a good couple of breakout sessions. It's good to see you all back here. We are going to have our drawing for the Netflix subscription and the portable DVD player after this session. But first, I'd like to introduce Mark Horstman, who is going to talk about management and leadership and managing your staff, a lot of really key skills that we heard about earlier today and the need for them. And Mark is one of the co-founders of ManagerTools.com, which is a website, if you haven't already discovered it, it is one of the leading podcast sites for business material, has all kinds of hour-long and other types of podcasts about managing your staff. Some really, really excellent tips on there. I know I've listened to some of them myself just for my own managing of my group. So without any further ado, please join me in welcoming Mark, and we'll get on with the session.
Thanks, Ed. Thank you. Before I start, how many of you, I just talked to Mark over here, who's a member of our website. Anybody else been to Manager Tools? So just a couple. It's free, and I'm about to disappoint and irritate you, and I'm good at that. And that is that everything I'm going to tell you, you already know. You're just not doing it. And you can get it for free, and you don't need to hire me, and you don't need to hire McKinsey or Bain or anybody else or Watson White or anybody else to do good development of your IT leaders. This stuff, as I say over and over again, you'll hear me on the cast say it all the time if you go to our podcast website, which, interestingly enough, for some reason, somebody at iTunes loves us, because for the last 2 years, we've been featured. The Wall Street Journal outranks us. I think we're ranked about number 10 in business. But we've been very, very fortunate that the site keeps growing and people keep turning into the fact that basic management is boring, repetitive, unsexy, unpretty, not fun, not exciting. Good management is invisible. Anybody here ever seen, there's a movie that came out a number of years ago called Dante's Peak. It stars, who's the guy that was Remington Steele? Pierce Brosnan, right? And he is a volcanologist, and he goes to this town, and the reason the movie is exciting is because there's a volcano, and you know what's going to happen, right? It's a mountain town, and the volcano blows up. They make movies about volcanoes because volcanoes blow up, okay? They do not make movies about the shifting of tectonic plates. You ever watch one of those? It's pretty boring, isn't it? Yeah, the reason they don't make movies, it is boring. You can't sell tickets for that, but in the history of the Earth, what's been more responsible for landforms on the Earth, tectonic plates or volcanoes? Tectonic plates kick volcanoes' butt, but nobody talks about it because it's boring, because it's not dramatic, because it's not Paris Hilton, it's not jail, it's not all that stuff, okay? My daughter just graduated from Tulane with a mechanical engineering degree, and her homepage on her, when she lights up her personal Google, is Pop Sugar, which is about celebrity gossip. I said, oh, you're too young. You're way too young. She's going to go to work for GE, and they'll beat it out of her, I'm sure. Management is like tectonic plates. You're never going to see a movie about it. And if you read a book about it, it's going to be because some CEO killed somebody. It's funny, the CIOs are never in there, though. I don't know what that is. Maybe you guys are boring. Maybe that's good. Look, good management is easy to understand and very hard to do because it takes discipline. I'm going to say it one more time. Everything I'm going to tell you now in the next 40 minutes is free. It's on our website. Go get it. Okay? And then just start doing it. It's a bit like diet, though. Anybody here ever tried to go on a diet and then stopped? Anybody said, I'm going to change the way I eat or I'm going to start working out? The same reasons that you're not doing this stuff in your organization now are the reasons that we're not all size 32 waist or we're not on the cover of Vogue or GQ or whatever. Because it's hard work to do over and over and over again. But it's not hard to understand at all. What Anne asked me to talk about was how to develop your IT leaders. Developing an IT leader is no different from developing a sales leader, a marketing leader, anybody else. IT people are not all that different, despite the fact that the people that work for you act as if they're enormously different. They act as if they're smarter. Somebody dealt you all a very bad hand by saying you should really hire lots of technical people, but because you're less important than almost everybody else in your organization, because you don't generate revenue, you spend money, and way too fast according to the CEO clients we have, because you're subordinated to everybody else, to the mission of the organization in most places, we're going to tell you you have to be very, very technical, but then, by the way, you have to learn customer service. That's what gets you all in trouble. You really stink at customer service. the salespeople, the marketing people. When I got out of the Army, I went to West Point, I was in the Army, went to work in Procter & Gamble, was in sales and marketing. If anybody here has ever heard Crest for Kids, bubblegum favored Crest, that was my product years ago. We hated the IT people because they wanted money and they weren't very customer service oriented. It's very hard. If you can find a place, a college that graduates great IT folks with super customer service skills, you should not tell anybody about it, and you should go recruit everybody. I've been traveling around to colleges and speak at all the big business schools, and I keep not finding it. So good luck with that. It's very hard to find that kind of person. But developing IT leaders is fundamentally the same as developing anybody else. And I'm going to run through it really, really fast, and if you have questions, great. I will say, I want to start with this. If you want to become a good manager, by the way, does anybody know the test about whether or not you're a good manager? Anybody got a? No, Mark may know it. I'll give you a test right now. I can tell you, if I were coaching you, we have a coaching service. If I were coaching you, this is the first question I would ask after I asked your assistant to see your calendar, and then I would proceed to cry over your calendar. This is often the case because you're all scheduled in meetings all day. I know you complain about it, but that's not very effective. Here's the question I would ask. Raise your hand if your family is more important than work to you. Okay, good. Everybody's hands are working. There are a few people whose hands didn't go up. Very interesting. It's okay. Don't laugh. They know that everybody here is smart. Okay? So, now, raise your hand if it's likely that the people who work for you believe that their family is more important than work. Not guaranteed, just likely. Okay? So now, how many of you are bosses, have direct reports? Raise your hands. Virtually everybody. Good. So now, raise your hand if you know the first names of all the children of all of your direct reports. Less than half. Folks, the people who work for you value their family more than the work that they do for you. And you don't even know the names of the most important creatures on the planet to them. You will never be a great manager unless you know that. And please don't tell me, oh, well, I don't care about personal stuff. It's not about you. It's about your directs. If you want to develop a direct, you better care a little bit about them. If you say we care about you, you might as well be writing the thing in the annual report that says people are our most important asset. Okay? Because underneath that, there's a little subtext. They're also our biggest liability. They're the ones that talk to the press and release secrets and make big mistakes. If you don't know the names of your direct's kids, your directs know that. And you are not fooling us when you say, how was soccer this weekend? What they think when you ask them that is, he doesn't know my kids' names. That's why he says, how are the kids? As he's walking by the cube going to another meeting. Okay? So, if I haven't already irritated you, I hope that I can continue to do so. But there are three things you need to know to be a great manager. You got to meet with your folks on a regular basis. That's what we call one-on-ones. I'm going to see if I can use this thing here. We recommend one-on-ones every week. Do not tell me you're too busy. I have CEOs of $2 billion companies who are clients of mine who are having direct one-on-one, half-hour-long meetings with all their direct reports every week. And the first thing that happens when you do that is you actually get more time because people stop showing up at your door five times a day saying, what about this, what about this, what about this, what about this? They throw it in their weekly one-on-one bucket and they ask you about it once a week. Okay? You should meet with everybody once a week because you've got to have a relationship with them. And by the way, one of the first questions you should ask them is, what are the names of your children? Okay? The second thing you should do, and you're really bad at this, you are phenomenally bad at this, and oh, by the way, so am I, is give lots of feedback. It sounds like this. Hey, can I give you some feedback? When you do that thing wrong, here are the bad things that happen. Can you do that different next time? Please. Or, hey, when you do it like that, can I give you some feedback? When you do it like that, that's good. Do more of that, please. Thank you very much. Good managers that we know, executives that we work with who are very, very good at what they do, give feedback 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 times a week. According to the survey we did of about 184 managers in 17 different countries over a period of 3 months, the average manager received 0.9 examples of feedback each week. How many of you have somebody who works for you that you're not real excited about their performance? How many of you think it's possible that that person, boy, it's shocking how many people didn't raise their hand. Everybody must have very good people working for them. Which, no offense, but I know a lot of managers, it's highly unlikely that that's true, that you don't have at least one person that you're worried about. But at the same time, how many of you would swear on your life that that person who's disappointing you knows it, down to their very bones? Okay. Anybody here? Who in the last year has said, if you don't do better, I might have to fire you? Oh, that's good. Oh, that's good. I know it sounds harsh. I don't mean to sound terribly harsh, but the fact is that conversation should happen a lot more in most organizations. And the reason it should happen more is we're all afraid to give feedback. And the last thing we recommend is coaching. What you know about coaching is fundamentally not true. It's funny how we talk about high school coaches and college coaches as being these great symbols of wonderfulness, and they taught us all this great stuff. And then when we talk about coaching in our companies, what it means is what you do in the last month before you fire somebody to ensure you have enough documentation so HR doesn't chew your ass. It's mind-boggling. Coaching is a good thing. And I'll tell you how much you don't know about it. I coach all of my direct reports, all the managers that work for us that we recommend use this technique. We coach all of the people who work for us in 5 minutes a week. Because, folks, if you're coaching me, I'm the one who's doing the work, not you. You're dealing with adults here. You want to coach somebody? Ask them to do more. Ask them to come up with a plan and ask them to implement the plan. And then give them feedback on it every week. That's all. How many times have you thought about, I need to coach somebody, but then you sat down late one day, the way you always do at 5:30 or 6 o'clock, when you finally get around to the thing you intended to do at the start of the day, but couldn't because you were in meetings all day and getting urgent emails. Urgent email, that's just like the dumbest thing I've ever heard. By the way, how many of you do email a lot? Raise your hand. Good. How many of you are getting more than 300 emails a day? I get about 300, 350. Okay. If you're doing email more than an hour and a half a day, you're horribly inefficient at it. We have people that work for us and clients of ours that do email first thing in the morning, once at lunch, and once at dinner. You are victims of the Parkinson's Law, which is work expands to fill the time to do it. The reason email is so hard on you is because it exists. It came into existence after you learned how to work. It's a very new technology. Nobody taught you how to do it. It was suddenly just jammed down your throat. And because of that, you didn't figure out a way to handle it. You just started doing it. The way to handle email is when you go to work first thing in the morning, you run through as much mail as you can. Then you do it again at lunch. You do it again at dinner. I get 350 emails a day, and I do it 3 times a day. That's all. And it's amazing. Nobody ever says to me, oh, they say, Mark, this is how our company runs. We've got people at Microsoft doing this. Intel, which is even more of an email culture than Microsoft, they do it that way. We have people who do it that way there, too. It's not hard. It's just hard. It's not hard to understand. It's just hard to do. Okay? But coaching, you can do 5 minutes a week. Okay, let's talk about developing people. All you have to do to develop people is give them jobs that are bigger than themselves and then hold them accountable for doing it. What is the best source of work for anyone in this room, for your directs? What is the best source of work that you could give them? I don't know anything about your job, and all of you should be able to give me the same answer to this. The best source of work to develop your people, to give them a tough job, where would be the source? Where would you look to find that? That's exactly right, your job. You need to delegate more. By the way, it's really easy to delegate. You stink at it. I'm sorry, we know it's true. We have data to support this. It takes about 15 seconds to learn it. You should go to the website, download the podcast, and do it. It's free. Okay? What most of you do is say, hey, I need you to do this. That's not the way you delegate. Okay? People don't understand what you mean by that. You think, when you talk to people that way, that they're going to do it exactly the way you do. Horseman's fourth law. You're not that smart, and they're not that dumb. Don't tell them to do it the way you want to do it, or just hand it to them. Spend an extra minute or two with them. Tell them what the parameters are. And then tell them to come back with a plan and report to you every week on it. Anybody here ever given something to one of their directs and wonder what happened to it after 3 or 4 weeks? Raise your hand. Oh, you lie like a rug. Okay. So you got to give them tough jobs. Your job. Who here knows what their primary responsibility is? Raise your hand. Who here is spending more than 50% of their time on their primary responsibility? Two. Shame on us. Okay? You know why the people who are really, really good at the top of really big corporations are really, really there? Because they really, really focus on really one or two things. That's it. Anybody here ever read Peter Drucker? Oh, okay, please, right now, If there are only two books you read in the next 5 years, actually, I'm going to give you three books. Anybody here like reading? Actually, books, not web pages, by the way, books. Web pages is not reading, okay? Just so you know. If you need to read three books to improve your ability to be a great manager, here are the three. The Effective Executive by Peter Drucker. And in the first chapter, he will tell you, and by the way, Mark should be able to validate all this because he's heard me say all this stuff 5,000 times, but The Effective Executive by Peter Drucker. Folks, it's about this thick. And in one chapter, it will change your life. It will teach you to get control of your time, or actually your priorities. And Drucker says, you probably have 17 things to do. You can't do all 17. That's why your spouse doesn't see you as much as he or she would like. Okay? But you're trying to do all 17, which is, by the way, the definition of management cognitive dissonance. I know I can't do all 17, but I'm going to try to do all 17. It's a bit like saying, I'm going to fly to the top of Mount Everest with no help. You just can't do it. And you continue to balance that, and you continue to take time away from your families. And it's horribly inefficient. Effective Executive, and Peter Drucker says, you can't do 17 things. You can't do three. He jokingly calls that a circus. Some of you who are really, really good can do two. And he's met like five of them. He met five of them before he died. The vast majority of us can do one. If you're not spending close to 50% of your time on your primary responsibility, your boss knows it. The people we know that are exceptionally good at management spend a lot of time. They continue to double down their bets on what's most important. And what that allows you to do is give up your tough jobs, a part of your job that either you're good at, but it's not core, or you don't like that's not core. Drucker will tell you that. First book is Effective Executive. The second book just came out, and many of you will love it. Anybody here read Marshall Goldsmith? Raise your hand. Okay, look, Marshall Goldsmith is 5,000 times smarter than me. He's way better. I get a nodding head and back. He's just so good. It's the book I wish I'd written, okay? It's called What Got You Here Won't Get You There. Anybody have any interest in getting promoted in the next 5 years? Raise your hand. Okay, yeah. Everybody has a Marshall's baton in their knapsack. What Got You Here Won't Get You There will be the best business book of 2007. And the best business book of the last 5 years, other than The World is Flat by Tom Friedman, is Execution by Larry Bossidy. Anybody here read Execution by Larry Bossidy? It's a great one. If you want to know about people stuff, a lot of it's in there, and he talks in very plain language. Anybody here read the latest Harvard Business Review article by Larry Bossidy about executing around people, about what the core job, what your CEO wants from you or what your boss wants from you? There's a part in there where he puts down, he says he has a one-page performance review. Raise your hand if you saw this thing. One-page performance review. By the way, your performance review system stinks. It's horrible. Everybody hates it. And they don't hate it because the system is bad. Well, okay, maybe they do. But they hate it because nobody taught them how to do it. By the way, there's a four-part series on our website to teach you how to do performance reviews. It's a piece of cake. You should go listen to it. It's wonderful. It's not wonderful because I came up with it. It's wonderful because it'll make your job way, way easier. But Bossidy actually has a one-page performance review, and he only uses the top half of the page. How many of you have more than five pages in yours? Yeah, just so you know, I'm going to replay for you in the mind of all of your direct reports what you say to them before you tell them what their raise is going to be next year when you give them their performance review. It sounds like this. For like 10 minutes, and then at the end you say 3.5, and they're like, damn. That's a performance review in today's world. You can boil all that down to one page. Okay? All right, so you got to develop people. You got to give them tough jobs. And it's simply a matter of discipline. You've got to give it to them, and then you've got to track them every week. You delegate something to them, and you say, I expect you to do this. And they say, gee, that's a really big job. Yes, it is. And if you want to get promoted, you're going to have to do a really big job. And I'm going to get promoted. And in 5 years, even if we don't get promoted, the company is going to be 20 or 30 or 40% bigger. And it is not a method for success in major corporations today to hire 20% more people to grow by 20%. If you want to be more successful in the long run, profitable growth means you grow by 20%, but you only hire 10% more. Right? Isn't that the way it should work? What does that mean if you grow 10% people, but you grow 20% of revenues? Somebody better be doing more work. And the way your people do more work is you give them more work. That's all. Now, you say to me, but they're busy. Yeah, but how many of you are busy? Just real quick, just a quick check. How many of you are busy? Raise your hand. How many of you have bosses who give you more work? Raise your hand. Oh, oh, but you're the one that's going to stop it. You're going to be nice. You're going to pet your little directs. I don't want to give them any more. They might be challenged. Give them big honking chunks of work and see who does well. That's how you develop people. Oh, now you say to yourself, well, what about the people who fail? Guess what? You don't know who's going to fail in many, many cases. And even if you do, why shouldn't they fail? If you're going to grow by 50% and their job's going to grow by 50%, why shouldn't you say, let's see how much of it you can get right now? And when you anybody here ever had a failure in their background? Raise your hand. Anybody ever learn from it? Who here got better because of their failure? Yeah, stop coddling your people. Point them right in the forehead and say, if you don't do this well, you're going to get less of a bonus. Now, why are you laughing? Is this not true? You are afraid. You know what? The single biggest emotion in corporate America today is fear. And what's scary is your people think you're high enough up that you know no fear. But when you look in the mirror in the morning, that's exactly what you feel. Holy crap. We have 6 or 7 CEO clients of $500 million companies or above. These are people I go visit every month. I sit down with them, talking about what their objectives are and so on. And you know what new CEOs, if I was working with them, an EVP or an SVP, you know what they tell me? Is this all there is? Holy crap. All their lives they tried to get to that top job. Imagine going all your life for the singular job, the top job, the division president, the CEO, whatever. The drive that gets you there at the moment you get the job goes away. Right? The thing that got you to the top of Everest ceases to exist. But now you're there at the top of Everest, and oh, by the way, you will have to live the rest of your life at the top of Everest. It scares them to death. What they want is people who work for them who say, give me part of your job, and I'll do it for you. And if you don't have the time to do it, you better be giving pieces of your job to somebody else. Now you say to me, oh, but wait, Mark, we can't do that because what happens when we get all the way down to the bottom of the organization? Oh, trust me, if you're high enough up, you don't need to worry that far down, okay? The fact is, the majority of stuff that's happened at the bottom of the organization, a couple levels, 5 levels, 7 levels down from you, could be gotten rid of and no one would notice. Or worse, maybe it wouldn't get done, but they would be spending time on higher value stuff. You want to develop people, give people tough jobs, and check in with them every week. Anybody here ever heard the greatest management principle in the world? Raise your hand. Oh, here it is. I didn't come up with it. It was a book about 20 years ago. The greatest management principle in the world. The things that get measured are the things that get done. Anybody here ever had a project that was 10 weeks long that was green for 9 weeks but mysteriously went red in week 10? Yeah. You know why that is? Because nobody's actually checking on what green means in week 2. And because when you ask them, you make the mistake of asking people, how's that project going? And you accept the answer of, fine. Well, that's crap. Send me a spreadsheet with how many tasks you're supposed to do this week and whether they're done or not. And if it says done, ask them, okay, so that's done. So your name is?
Dave.
So Dave works for me, and I've given Dave 5 things to do. And each of them has 10 tasks. Okay, over a period of 10 weeks. We're going to make this up. And I say to him, okay, so look, I got your spreadsheet here, weekly spreadsheet, and it says says on project A, you had to do 3 things, and you did all 3 of them, right?
Yes.
Good. So they're all green, right?
Yes.
Let me just pick a couple of them, and let's talk about it in more detail. And I discover that he's really kind of sketchy. Well, I sent the email, but I haven't heard back yet. What? It's not actually done. I sent the email to ensure it was done, but it's not actually done. This happens all the time, everywhere we go. So Dave says to me, well, technically it's not done. I said, okay, look, it's red then. Because the deadline was yesterday, and you were supposed to be done by yesterday, and it's not done, so that makes it red. And he says to himself, privately, he says, crap, my project's red. I could get in trouble. And you say, hey, do you need any help? He says, well, dude, that sounds kind of funny. And you say, by the way, you're red. What are the chances you're going to be green by next week?
Not good.
Oh, he says, not good. What does the smart direct say? Really good. But why? Yeah, excellent. In fact, you can virtually count on it because when they leave your office, the first thing they'll do is go send another email. No, I'm just kidding. They will figure out a way to do it. Folks, we've got to hold people's feet to the fire. It is not rocket science. The reason you're not great at management is you are fearful of hurting people's feelings. I know, in the back of your mind, you're saying, wait, Mark, we'll have a retention problem. My people will leave. Yes, the bad ones will. And the good ones will thank you for finally pointing out that this guy over here, he's the one that's green for 9 weeks and then suddenly red. Your good ones are doing good things, and they want to be told we're not doing good. Who here would like to get more feedback from their boss, good or bad? Raise your hand. Yeah. But your people, you don't want to give them feedback? Yeah. By the way, I think we're doing a breakout session later on feedback. If you want to know how to give feedback, we're going to cover that later. Okay? So the first question you ask people is, did you or did you not do what I asked you to do? And by the way, you shouldn't have to actually ask them actively, because when we're talking about developing a direct, we're talking about Dave here, who, by the way, has suddenly become really good because I gave him a lot of very direct feedback. Who's responsible for Dave's performance, me or Dave? Actually, both of us are. Dave's responsible for his behavior, and I'm responsible for Dave's behavior or Dave's performance, right? Whose goal is it? Is it my goal or is it Dave's goal? It's Dave's goal. Whose task is it? It's Dave's task. Who knows more about the task, me or Dave? Dave, that's right. By the way, that was the interactive portion of the day. Okay? So who would know more about whether or not it's done or not? So should I have to go ask Dave every week how things are going? No, I should not. Why should I have to ask him every week? I should just tell him, hey, look, every week I expect you to tell me what you've done. Now, I recommend verbally every week, monthly in writing, depending upon the size. As you get higher in the organization, generally you can go to monthly. When you get lower in the organization, you can actually ask for weekly reports. Yes, a spreadsheet is just fine. Oh, there are real pretty forms you can find out on the web. We may even have done them. But you already have Excel. You already have all kinds of project management software. How many of you all have project management software of some sort in your organization? Everybody, just so you know, they hate it. You know why they hate it? You know what they do? They complain. Anybody here have anybody in the organization complaining about their project management software? Wait, let me ask that again. Maybe I asked it wrong. How many of you have project management software in your organization? Hold your hand up high. And how many of you have people who complain about it? Virtually everybody. What they complain about is features, right? It doesn't do this or it doesn't do that. They are fibbing to you. They don't like the fact that it shines a bright light on whether they have done or not done something. By the way, when they say to me, I don't have time to report on that. I don't have time to do that. Who here has ever heard somebody say, you can't ask me to report on all that because I actually have work to do. It's amazing. Your bosses expect you to report to them. Why don't we expect that of everybody else? All the managers, all the individual contributors. Oh, and then we have the special individual contributor who's very, very good. And he says, yeah, I'm really good at thinking about code, or I'm really good at thinking about networks or whatever, so I really didn't have to report. Well, gee, that's nice. But it reminds me of that story about the kid who says to the recruiter at college, I really want a job working with people. And the recruiter says to themselves, well, that's good, because all the jobs working with dogs and trees in our company are taken. You're going to have to work with people. So those high-performing individual contributors that say, I don't really want to report on stuff, what you say to them is, I'm really sorry. All the jobs where you don't have to report on what you do, they're at some other company that doesn't pay as well. Please go there. It's absolutely reasonable to expect adults who are doing work to report to you, because it says right down here, the key to this whole thing is you being passive about the work that your directs are doing. You do not have time to develop your people, because you cannot develop your people. They have to develop themselves. How many of you felt like you've learned a lot, grown a lot, and the single biggest engine of your success has been you? Raise your hand. Okay, good. Ask that of your directs. Say to them, this is the job. I need it in a month. Let me know what resources you need, how much time you need, and I expect you to report to me weekly on how you're doing. And by the way, every week I expect green, yellow, red. And by the way, because I'm talking to an IT organization, I use green, yellow, red. There's 100 other ways to report. You can do percentages, everything else. I know a lot of IT organizations use project management, use green, yellow, red. It happens to work wonderfully. Sales and marketing organizations where use it as well. Works just fine. And people are afraid of red. We understand that. And you know what? We don't care. We just don't care. I'm afraid. Oh, thanks for letting me know. Our customers, they want our product for less money. I think we should give it to them for less money. No, we're not going to. We're going to talk to them about the features and benefits, and we're going to sell it for full price. Right? I'm sorry, you're afraid. Guess what? So am I. So is everybody else. That's all right. Thank you for sharing. Now, would you please get back to work? What's funny is, your boss treats you this way. Absolutely. And you need to start treating your folks that way as well. And your people who are the best will rise right up 20% the moment you start doing this. Say, here, I want you to do more. And by the way, when they say, I'm swamped, for your best people, you might want to believe it. And you say, okay, come talk to me about what you're working on, and let's pick a couple of things and give it to one of your directs. Oh, I don't think that my direct, let's say Dave has a direct. Your name is?
John.
So Dave is my direct. John works for Dave, and I go to Dave. Dave, got a big project here for you. You know, you were thinking about that promotion. It would look really good if you did this for that promotion, right? Actually, I probably wouldn't say that, but I would let him believe that, and that would be good. Okay? I'd say, didn't you say you were wanting to get promoted in the next couple of years?
Yes.
I think this is the kind of thing. These are the kind of projects that I believe would look right to the leadership team in terms of that kind of visibility for you. And by the way, when this thing comes up, you're going to be doing the presenting, not me. Okay? And if you mess it up, that's okay. We'll talk about it before. We'll plan it. We'll practice it. We'll rehearse it. And then you'll deliver it, and I'll give you feedback afterwards, and I'll tell you what the board thought as well. And I want you to do this big project. And you say to me, God, Mark, I don't have time. I can't get there. Well, why not? I got too much to do. Let's talk about, let me ask you, Dave, is this more important than those other three things? Yeah. Okay, so you need to get rid of something. Yeah. Okay, and it's John, right? John. So I say, well, isn't John pretty good? Yeah. So pick one of these things and give it to John. How do I do that? I just showed you. That's all. And John says, well, gee, I'm really busy. And you say, guess? Well, yeah, that's right. And maybe if John's at the bottom of the chain, John may have to say, there's some stuff that's not going to get done. Okay. And what ends up happening is you have a big project up here that you know the ROI for, and you got some stuff that John may not work on that you're not really sure of, and you definitely don't know what the ROI is on. Is that a hard choice to make? Not hard at all. Okay? Okay. They own their performance, they own tasks, and so on. Not rocket science. If this seems really, really boring and really, really repetitive, I started out by telling you that and said I would irritate you. That's my job. Okay? So look, how do you get performance management, which is development? The way you develop people is you manage their performance. The way you manage their performance is every single day you give them feedback. I say to Dave, hey, Dave, can I give you some feedback? When you tell me you're green and then I find out in another meeting that, in fact, we're going to be red tomorrow and you didn't even send me an email, I really look like an idiot in front of my peer. What can you do differently next time? And Dave says, oh, I'm so sorry. We found out about that last night. I said, dude, all you have to do is just send me a mail. Send me a quick mail saying we may be yellow on project A. That's all I need. And I'll send back thanks. I'll walk into the meeting the next day knowing. Anybody here ever been surprised by a peer of theirs telling you that you were yellow or red when, in fact, you thought you were green? Raise your hand. That's your direct's problem. You're not holding your direct's feet to the fire to let you know what's going on. Now, it's also possible for some of you, not all of you, but for some of you, you are under the impression that what you should do when people fail you is you should yell. Okay? Well, even though I know I've joked a little bit here about being direct and being forceful with your folks, you should also know there is never a place in management to yell. Anger is, anybody here ever been angry at work besides me? Oh, by the way, it's 2:30, so now you're starting to get tired. Anybody here ever been angry at work besides me? Didn't say, you felt angry. Not that you acted angry, but you felt it. Look, it's okay to feel angry. How you feel is your fault, but it's okay to feel angry. It's just not okay to act angry. If you're yelling at your folks, it's grossly ineffective. It scares the daylights out of them, and they start to avoid failure rather than seeking success. Okay? So we don't want to yell, but essentially, if in fact people are coming to us and saying, I'm red, and you yell at them, you're going to get less bad information. The less bad information you get, the more likely you are to get surprised. The rule in executive levels in corporations I work with, 3 surprises, bye-bye. That's what I've discovered. If it's a big enough surprise, if it's a big enough ROI issue, you'll be surprised. If you get surprised 3 times, you surprise the boss 3 times, see you later. The first time, it's wow. The second time, is this the pattern? Third time, it's a pattern, yes, goodbye. You don't get patterns at that level, right? Executives don't have room for patterns, okay? So, daily feedback, every single day. I'll give you an example of how easy feedback is. I come into work at 6:30 in the morning. Dave's got a presentation to give at 11 to the board. And when I come in at 6:30, he's in a conference room with the slides going over them. Now, I'm digging that. Who here would like to see your directs reviewing slides, rehearsing them in advance? Okay? Yeah. Yeah, so I walk by, I poke my head in, and this is feedback. Hey, can I give you some feedback? When I see you in here at 6:15 in the morning, rehearsing, it's awesome. Thanks. How long did that take? I'm sorry. How long did that take? 5 seconds. Now, how many of you have said, oh, I don't want to give them feedback. It takes too long. Crap. No, it doesn't take too long. You want to make it a big speech. Hey, Dave, can I give some feedback? When I see that you're working early in the morning, I think, boy, what a professional. And boy, that's really good. I know you're working on the slides, and that's good because the board will look good. That'll make me look good. Don't make it so hard. They know all that stuff. Hey, can I give some feedback? When you come in early, I appreciate it. Thanks. Or what about Dave messes up a key bullet on the ROI? He's got a data point's wrong. Hey, can I give you some feedback? When you have the data wrong in the presentation, it makes us look bad. It lowers the chances we're going to get that. Can you do that differently next time? There it is. How long did that take? 5 seconds. That's all. You're not giving feedback because you are afraid. That's all. I just showed you. It's not rocket science. Did I hurt your feelings? Although we have had situations, we role play feedback in our conferences that we do and when I coach executives, and people actually say, when I got good feedback, it actually made me feel good. I said, it was a hypothetical situation. It didn't even occur. It still made me feel good. Okay? So look, you do daily feedback, and I'm not saying that at 9 o'clock every day on your calendar you put down, give Dave feedback. You just look for people. It's like, I hate to say it because the really, really small books, other than The Effective Executive, are horribly cheesy. But there is a book that was real popular, remember, The One-Minute Manager. Anybody ever read One-Minute Manager? The core of that book, the concept behind that book is great. Catch your people doing something good. And catch them doing it and say something about it. Okay? So that's good. And doing it in less time is really, really good. So I'm not suggesting that you should schedule it. But when you see something good, poke your head in and say, hey, when I see that, that's great. Thank you very much. Okay? Well, if you want a test, ask one of your directs. When you get back, Monday or Tuesday, go to one of your directs, somebody who's good, and say to them, hey, can I give you some feedback? By the way, you've already thought it out in advance, and you know what you're going to say, and you know it's going to be positive, okay? You're going to essentially pat this person on the back. You're going to say to her, boy, you're sharp. I really appreciate that extra effort you did last week, or whatever. You look at their faces when you say to them, may I give you some feedback? You know what look you're going to see on their face? Terror, sheer, unadulterated terror. And then they're like, what, did I do something? Am I in trouble? No, I'm just giving you feedback. And they're like, oh, okay, go ahead. And they actually kind of go home, and the joke is their home life gets better that night because they feel better, okay? So look, every week sit down with your folks, ask them to report to you on what you've given them, okay? That's it. Where are you on this stuff? Every month, ask them to give you a written report on everything that they're working on. If they're working on something that's low value added, take it off right then and fill it up with something that's higher value added. And then we recommend once a quarter sitting down with your directs and saying, if I had to give you a review right now, this is what it would look like. You could write it with a pen if you want. You don't have to spend all that time going through the process and making it all formal and getting HR involved. That doesn't make a lot of sense. One-on-ones, feedback, and coaching. I think I have 3 minutes left. Any questions? I bet not. Yes, please.
I have more I want, but I do the agenda and I also do the meeting minutes and match items, and it's just miserably time consuming.
Yes.
Bad practice.
Okay.
Should I make them do it? Or?
No. You're talking about your one-on-ones?
Yeah.
No. Let me just tell you. I don't have time to go over one-on-ones now, but I will tell you this. Every week, 30 minutes long, the same thing every time. In fact, the logo, you can see it up there just barely right up here. That's a clock, and there are three sort of 10-minute pie wedges there. The first 10 minutes are for them. If you're my director, I start out the one-on-one, and I say, how's it going? And you can tell me anything you want. You can talk to me about work. You can talk to me about your kids. You can talk to me about your gallbladder surgery. Trust me, you start asking people week after week, how's it going? They're going to tell you stuff you never dreamed you would hear. And I guarantee you, two words, I hate to say it, but they are people, they do have normal lives, they're given bodies, and you're going to hear at some point in your first year from one of your direct reports, bodily fluids, I promise you, okay? Because they're people, okay? So the first 10 minutes are theirs, then the next 10 minutes are yours. And this is tight. You have 30 minutes. When 30 minutes is up, you get out of there. The reason it's taken so long is you have an agenda, and it's not a standing one. The standing one is you get 10 minutes, then I get 10 minutes, and then we get 10 minutes to talk about the future. 90% of the time for most managers, that 10 minutes keep eating up. You take 12, I take 13 minutes, and suddenly we're at 26, and we chat for a minute, and we're done. But if we found that if we made it two 15-minute sections, first the direct and then the manager, we found that you never, ever talked about the future. And everybody bitches about not being able to talk about the future, so we scheduled 10 minutes for it. 90% of the time it gets eaten up by real work and the fundamental thing is when you actually end up finishing in 20 minutes. You take 10 minutes and say, okay, where are we? What are you going to be doing next year? How do we feel about it? What kind of development do we need to do? What kind of coaching do I need to do for you? Don't create an agenda in advance. You can go to our website and get a free document that you download that you can that has questions in the bottom to ask them. It's a one-page form. I use that form myself every week with everyone on my direct reports. I've been doing one-on-ones this way for 14 years. It works like a charm. And when you get to the end of the year to do a review, having 50 weeks worth of one-on-ones make reviews trivially simple. By the way I get ready for my one-on-ones is I'm sitting, I'm thinking, oh, I gotta go talk to Dave later in my one-on-one. I think, I gotta ask Dave about X. So I write down on my yellow sticky note, ask Dave about X, and I stick it on the front of the notebook. And when I open up the notebook, there's all my one-on-one questions that I'm gonna ask Dave during our 30 minutes. Don't create an agenda. Don't do anything more than say sit down with them and say, what's going on? And then during your 10 minutes, waterfall stuff down and ask them how they're doing on various projects and so on. That's it. I think I'm out of time, am I not? Anything else? Other questions? Look, one more time. Good management is boring. It's unsexy. It's unpretty. It's tectonic plates. It's not Pierce Brosnan. It is not a volcano. And all of it's for free. The MBAs that you're hiring don't get it. That's not a master's in management. It's a master's in business administration. It's two different things. It's not hard to do. It's just boring, repetitive, and it requires discipline. Good luck.
Thank you, Mark. And as Mark mentioned, he is doing a breakout session this afternoon at 3:30. So if you want some more management tips and giving feedback to your directs, make sure to tune in there. So before we get started with our next session, we have the drawing that I mentioned earlier for the year-long subscription to Netflix and a portable DVD player. And with me, we have Ashish Chadha, who's marketing manager for the mid-market for Cisco Systems, and they sponsored this giveaway. So we're going to draw a name. Ashish, let's see. Somebody from the middle of the pile.
Yeah, the middle, mid-markets.
Sounds good.
Let's see if they answer the questions right here.
Yes, you have to answer the trivia questions right to win also. And they did.
Daniel Williams.
Is Daniel Williams here? Hopefully he didn't just run out to get a cup of coffee.
Ah, what do we do?
All right, let's try somebody else. Are you guys excited about this prize? I'll take that as a yes. You can read it. You can play it on the plane on the way home. So
a year's worth of Netflix.
And a year's worth of Netflix. That's the new way to do video.
All right.
Okay.
Another right answer. Very good. Angelo Prevetera. Sorry about that. All right.
All right. Angelo's the winner. What do they do to get the subscription? Are the details in there or something?
Oh, yeah, it's right here.
Okay.
Just said I needed that for the plane ride.
Well, there you go, Angelo.
Here's a month, and here's the Sony person.
Thank you very much.
Welcome.
Thanks.
Congratulations.
Great. Thanks, Angelo. Thanks to everyone who participated in the drawing. Okay, great. There you go.
Thank you.
All right. Now, next up, we have Reed Holden. Is Dr. Holden here? All right. He is going to talk. We have switching gears just a little bit, we're going to talk about pricing technology now. And all of you have goods and services of some type that your organization sells. And Dr. Holden is an expert in this particular area and has a lot of really interesting statistics and information to share about how to really optimize that for your organization. So with that, please join me in welcoming Dr. Reed Holden.
Thank you, Ann. I got here at breakfast, sitting down at breakfast, and a group of IT people around the table, and we're asking what each other does. And one of the people asked me, so what do you do? I said, do pricing. And it was silent. When they called me to come and speak, my reaction was pretty much the same as his. Pricing, CIOs, IT professionals. What are we going to talk about? Two different worlds, right? Smokestacks of the organization. I've written a couple of books in pricing, been teaching it for probably 15 years.